Let's do a podcast. Let's do a podcast. Let's do a podcast. You guys. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Mundane Festival podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lambert. Today is Monday, July 11th, 7/11/2016. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and on Podbean, the host site. If you like this show, please rate and review it on iTunes and or Stitcher. Give it a 5-star review. Let everyone know why you like it, because it will make me feel good about myself and most of the life decisions that I've made so far. You can email the show at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. Let me know what's on your mind. More importantly, what's on your heart. I'd appreciate it. What else can you do? You can like the show on Facebook. You can follow it on Twitter at Mundane Festival. And you can follow the guy talking to you right now on Twitter at Chris Lambert. That's me. So this is episode 175. I'm doing it alone in my apartment. Again, this is probably going to be a short episode because I've got some stuff that I need to take care of. Got a call back for an audition. How about that, you guys? So I've got to memorize some scenes. So that's good that I didn't, you know, sometimes you go into these auditions and you think you do okay, and you never know what's going to happen. It's all a crapshoot. And you go in there and there were certain things that I said. not like I was being a dick, but it's like, oh, should I have said that? And it wasn't anything bad or racist or anything, but just maybe something I should have kept close to the vest. But then at the same time, I'm like, look, this is who I am. This is who I am. I'm reading for this part. And if you pick me, this is what you're working with. And, you know, that's one of those things. So it was nice. I did come out of that audition saying, oh, should I have said that? Should I have? So, and they asked me to start off the audition by giving them a joke or a short story. And I didn't know how long they wanted the thing to be. So I just gave them a one liner and they were like, oh, that was kind of dark. Okay, let's do the scene. And then I'm in there and I'm reading for the part and it's going pretty good. And I'm with the reader and she's very good. And, you know, giving me everything I need to, you know, work with. Sometimes when you go on an audition, you'll go in there, there'll be a person on the camera, maybe there'll be the director and a couple people in the room. So this is about three people in the room, the director who was working the camera, one of the producers, and I guess maybe two of the producers. One of them was reading with me. And sometimes when you go in, you have a reader that's just like, that's not giving you anything. And you have to pretend like you're engaged with this person in some real moments. It hasn't happened too many times, but, you know, I don't know if I told this story on the show before, but there was one time I went in for this audition. It was an August Wilson play, and I think it was Jitney. Yeah, it was Jitney, one of my favorite, probably my favorite August Wilson play, because at the time, I think I was old enough to only play one role, this character of Youngblood, and it was, I think it was originated by the dude. He's a beast too. Is his name Russell? Oh fuck. What's the name of that show? I don't know if it's still on. It's some show that's like a supernatural show, and it's a black dude and a white dude and they're detectives. I never watched the show, but I like the actor. You know what I can do? He was on this show called Gideon's Crossing that only lasted a season with Andre Brower. And I'll get his name. I'll do it that way. Out of deductive reasoning. I mean, you know, I'll break it down. What was his name? I thought it was Russell something. Russell Hornsby. Okay. Yeah, really, really good actor. And I think he originated the role. He was one of the first people to play that part. And you know, like, so I was excited. I was like, oh shit, I got a call back. and I'm excited, I'm prepped, I'm getting ready, and I get in there, and the director's, like, just eating a fucking Subway sandwich, and he already knows, like, it's basically, some of those are just, like, these dog and pony shows when you go on auditions. At least it was in Chicago to a certain degree, because they, like, knew all the black actors for the most part. You know, you'd only get, you get a part in a one of the big companies, you know, I mean, maybe be like one or two spots for black people, black actors. And then in February, you know, some one of the big theater companies would do some black play and everybody would go and everybody and their mother would audition for that. I don't know if I've told you the story about when I was just out of grad school, I was 25, did this showcase. And it's where you do like a monologue and you do it in front of like casting directors and all these agents and managers that are in the Chicago area, whoever wants to come that wants to, you know, represent some actors, some young actors that just got their degree and shit. So I go and I get a chance to be a reader at this place called the Court Theater in Chicago. It's on the University of Chicago campus. They're one of the top theaters in the city. So you got the Court, you got Chicago Shakes, Steppenwolf, and the Goodman, and I'm in the Looking Glass Theater. So that's like, and there might be, and I might be missing more, but those are the main, those are the big dogs. And so the Court, I get this audition, I get this chance to just be a reader. And so I remember the director telling me, he said, before we start, he's like, "You're gonna meet the top actors in Chicago, the top black actors." I was like, "Bring them on!" And I'd seen them just being around the city and being on the periphery of the theater scene and all of that stuff. And you know, I was the reader, and I was bringing it. Like, it was a production of Fences that they did, and I was old enough to play probably the son. Just on the edge, the son was like high school age, and I could look young enough to play that if I shaved or whatever. And I wasn't as big as I was. I was a nice size. Didn't know how beautiful and handsome I was at 25. I wish somebody would have told me. But isn't that how it is sometimes? So I'm reading 2 days, reading against the top people, and there's one woman, I'm not gonna mention her name, who's a super talented actress. And I was like, "Oh fuck, she's a beast, she's a monster." So I got to like really bring it. And I remember having my college ring on, and I was reading, and I like kind of cut her hand, not majorly, but I cut her hand because like we were in the middle of an intense scene, and I kind of hurt her finger, and that was embarrassing. I wasn't trying to overact or anything, and I'm not that dude. I don't want to be like, I've never been that dude that would just I want to, you know, play the reality of the scene and all this shit. And then that happened, I was so fucking embarrassed. And so it came to the point the second day where, they gave me to say, "Chris, you can audition. We're going to let you audition for the son." And I was like, "Oh shit, this is all right." And I auditioned, and there was this guy came in, and he had played the role of Troy. Troy's the James Earl Jones character. What was his son's name? Fences. I'm gonna look it up for you guys. Cast. I just want to do who the main characters are. What's the kid's name? Because his son was like a baseball player and a football player. Corey. Corey was his son. And so they're like, "Chris, you're going to audition for Corey." And they had this guy that had been playing the role up in Buffalo. And the guy comes in. He looks just like my dad. Like, he looks like the dude just like looks like my dad. And it was crazy. And so it's like I'm doing this intense scene with my dad, and I fucking killed that shit. And they offered me, they ended up offering me the understudy role, and I didn't do it because I had a, and the guy that did it actually got to go on once. But I had booked a children's play. I booked a kid's play that was paying some money, and I didn't have to feel like I was on call all the time, you know. So I just, it's something about being an understudy. If you, and I just think maybe, I think if I was cast in a play now, like to be an understudy on a Broadway show, I'd obviously take it. But I think I know when Katrina Link was on the show, we talked about that, what it was like having to be an understudy and always having to be ready. You know, just you feel like a fireman or a doctor. Like you don't know when there's going to be a fire or an emergency, you know, but it's, you know, it might happen and you have to be prepared. That's just one of the scariest things to me to do as an artist, because when you're not, you just have to be prepared. And then I guess if that was all that I was doing, it would probably be a lot easier. And so I just say all that to say, and I was a good reader, because I knew it made me know what it's like. Like these people are coming in and auditioning and trying to, you know, they're trying to put in work. They're trying to do their job. And it was some of them that were doing their thing, and I just ate them. I ate them like for breakfast. All their tricks that they were doing, I was throwing it back in their face. I was like I was bitter at 25. Now, I had seen these people perform before, and I could see what they were doing, and it was just like, I don't know, maybe I was being a dick back then. I don't know. I guess maybe I'm less bitter now. I don't know. So so basically going into that audition on Saturday that I went to, it was cool. They were nice. I just felt like, okay, so I was in the middle of a scene and I was doing this like long monologue, and I just stopped. I said, that sucked. Can I do that again? And they let me do it again, and it sucked less. So basically it was nice that they liked me, nice that they're giving me a shot to be seen. There it goes. I'm peeling back the layers, letting you peek inside the hood a little bit about what it's like to do what I do, man. So that was cool. So hopefully we'll see what happens with that. If something happens, I'll let you know. If not, you know, so be it. So my week was pretty good. It was relatively short because I was came off vacation from North Carolina, and I had two shows last week, which I needed. Like it was so much fun. I did this show called the Show/Tell Show at Over the 8 in Brooklyn. I guess you could say that's the Williamsburg area. If it's not Williamsburg, it's super close, but I think it's Williamsburg. It's a bar show, back of the room, and it's run by Niles Turner, and it was so much fun. Who was MC? See, this is like, I hate when I just really being spotty with this shit. You know what? I can do this. Hold on. Trying to this would be nice if I knew what I was talking about. Dan Fisher. I thought that was Dan Fisher was the host. And I don't know if he's not the house host, but I guess he was hosting that week. Really cool dude. He was emceeing, and then the homie Andrew Short, friend of the podcast, came by. He's actually Dan's cousin, and I got to talk to him, kicked it with him. He did a set, so it was fun, man. It was fun to see him. I was working on some new shit, and I was trying to figure it out, and I was like, maybe that's not what I want to do, you know. And then I ended up saving myself. I ended up having an okay set, like a good set. And after that show, there was a couple that came up to me. They said, "Oh, we heard you on Two Dope Queens, Phoebe Robinson and Jessica Williams's podcast." So that was cool, and they got to hear me do new stuff, and I wasn't just doing the same shit that I did in December. So that was neat. When I recorded that. So that was really dope. That was really cool. I don't know. if they followed me on Twitter, or if they found out that I was going to be there, or they just happened to come to that show. So I can't say that they were like fans, like they were like, oh my God, Chris Lamberth is going to be at this free bar show in Brooklyn. So I don't know, but it was really nice to hear them say that. That made me feel good, and hung out with Andrew for a little bit, got to hang out with him, and went over to the stand, saw some people, saw some comics, hung out over there for a little bit. Then I closed out this show called the Glass Half Full Show at Gotham Comedy Club in their the downstairs showroom, which they call the Vintage Lounge. And I ended up doing like, I think I was only scheduled to do 14, but they told me to go longer, 15, I think. And so that was fun. I ended up doing like 25, and I was just, it was so much fun. Like I was riffing a little bit, started off riffing, and just had a lot of fun. And it just, I hadn't done stand up in about 2 weeks since JL CD taping. And I had been away, and it just reminded me how much I love stand up, how much I love comedy. And I was really excited to be doing some new stuff, and it just really like charged me. And I just felt really, really good listening back to those sets. Tip your sets, comedians, young comedians and old comedians. And it was fun. And so like I got some shit, you know, I got some stuff to talk about on stage, and it's really cool. So why don't, since we're talking about comedy, why don't I give you some dates? So this week, excuse me, I'm going to be at the Rar Bar. It's like, I think it's like a French place. It's called Restaurant, but it's like, if you type in R-A-R Bar Astoria, I'm going to be there at 10 o'clock p.m. on tomorrow. Tomorrow I'm going to be there. 7-12, Rar Bar Astoria, New York, 10 o'clock p.m. The 14th, Thursday the 14th, I'm going to be at UCB East on one of my favorite shows to do in the city called Lasers in the Jungle at UCB East. Always a good time doing that show, so I'm excited about that. 7:21, I'm at QED Astoria in Astoria, New York at 9 o'clock p.m. 7:31, Knitting Factory, Brooklyn, New York, 9 o'clock p.m. That's going to be a blast. It always is. That's going to be me making my triumphant return to the Knitting Factory on a Sunday night. So you're going to want to be there for that. It's going to be fun. August 3rd, I'm going to be at Oliver's in Astoria. A lot of Astoria shows this in these coming months. Oliver's, Astoria, 8:30 p.m. August 6th, Cantina Royale, the Good For You show, Brooklyn, New York, 8:30 p.m. August 11th, The Green Room at the Arlington Draft House in Arlington, Virginia at 8 o'clock p.m. And big show, August 14th, The Cellar Door in Frederick, Maryland, 8 o'clock p.m. If you are in the Maryland, D.C. area, maybe it's like an hour outside of the city, outside of D.C., maybe an hour from Baltimore, come to that. It's a Sunday night, and it's going to be a good time. Be a lot of fun. So I'm super excited about that. I got some jokes. I got these jokes, young. These new jokes coming, young. That fire. So that's going to be fun. So that being said, God, I would be remiss if I didn't mention the crazy shit that happened with the Philandro Castile and the Alton Sterling killings, the senseless police killings. And then you got Dallas, the terrorist act by the sniper guy. And they're calling that, I don't know that I believe that that's the worst thing to happen since 9/11. I mean, nobody, like, what about, you know, see, this is, fuck. You know what? You know, I don't know if that's true. I thought the Charleston shootings were pretty bad. The 9 people in a church, the guy goes in, Dylan Roof goes in, and he has church with him, and then he kills him because he said he wanted to kill black people, and he's still alive, and they gave him a extra value meal from Burger King, and this Micah Johnson guy, terrorist in and of himself. Both of them are terrorists. He shoots some cops, kills some five people, and wounds a bunch of others. And they blow him up with a science project with a robot. And they show his body on some news sites. Show him blown up. I don't know. There's conspiracies around that shit. I don't know. And then you find out so much more about this dude that he couldn't even get in the Black Panthers, the new Black Panther Party. And there was other like groups that he couldn't get into. So it's kind of like no wonder he spazzed out, but he shouldn't have. It's another one of these guys that should have got help. Ex-military guy, very troubled guy, man. And I just saw a thing come up. I didn't realize that I wasn't following Reuters. I follow Reuters, but I didn't know they had a Reuters U.S. News Twitter feed. And it just came up on my timeline about 5 minutes ago where mother of Dallas Sniper says he was very disappointed with U.S. military experience. So it's just a guy he's a troubled guy, 25 years old, and a lot of shit going on with him. And it's not the way you deal with problems. It's not the way. Like, you had the dude that ambushed those cops a couple years ago in Brooklyn. You know, and then you get into the argument of where, you know, obviously the Black Lives Matter movement is important, and just because you support Black Lives Matter does not in any way mean that you don't support police. But the way things have been for since the inception of law enforcement, it's not been on the sides of minorities, blacks and minorities. It's just that nobody wants to. I think collectively, those who are not hashtag woke don't want to believe that there's two different Americas. There's one America for white people, and there's one for blacks and other minorities. And we are, I know it gets to the point now where some people have these struggle Olympics, like who had it worse, you know, like, because you know, in this country, so you want to feel like you deserve what you deserve, or I don't even know what that is. But it is a struggle. It's definitely a struggle Olympics. Like, was slavery harder than the Holocaust? What was worse? Is it worse being black, poor and black, or is it worse being poor and white? I lost a friend. I remember losing a friend. It was over some bullshit, really, where it was about and I think I might have mentioned this. I think this was probably earlier this year or late last year, whenever Aziz Ansari's Master of None show premiered, and it premiered on Netflix. Solid show. I enjoyed it. And, you know, they talked about the diversity in the cast, and, you know, it was great. And see, this is one of the reasons why I always say, I throw that hashtag out, black actors and black, because it means something to me. It's a little subversive. It's tongue in cheek. There's definitely humor and whimsy in it, but it's important. It's in it, and that's why I do it. And Aziz did this appearance on the Stephen Colbert show, The Late Show, and he was talking about, you know, diversity. And I was like, wow, this is really cool. And I shared it. And one friend was, you know, certain people liked it. They're like, oh, this is cool. Then somebody said, oh, I don't know about this. And then this other woman who I knew for a few years, and she was saying, oh, I don't need to be seeing this at night and blah, 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 and diversity. This is such and such. This is that. And she got really upset and over just Aziz making a point about diversity on a late show and him having a dialogue with Stephen Colbert about it. And she got bent out of shape, and she was, she got upset, and then I was like, I don't need this person in my life if you're getting upset about this. But I remember and she was white. I remember looking back, she would always, out of nowhere, not always, but she would bring up situations where, like, oh, I had it worse because, you know, I had it bad too because I grew up, you know, poor and I grew up in this type of neighborhood, you know, just assuming because I was black that I grew up poor. And I didn't grow up poor. I mean, my parents were, they were middle class, we were a middle class family. And I always say, like, I was the black Kevin Arnold, for better or for worse. And, you know, my dad would get laid off and he would get another job. And, you know, they sent me to private school. I didn't want for anything. I had everything that I needed as a kid and then some. I wanted some Jordans one time. I got some Jordans. I wanted a starter jacket. I got a starter jacket. I wanted some Nintendo games. I got a good report card. I would get those Nintendo games. So it wasn't, you know, that I was playing sports. I was doing, you know, going on trips, going to King's Dominion and Adventure World and all of that shit. And most of the people that I was around and my classmates who were also black had the same shit. Some people had more. And that's what I grew up around with, like, just middle class black people, parents that worked in factories or worked at a warehouse, my mom worked in a lithograph company, but she worked at, it's a bookbinding company is where she worked at, you know, when I was growing up, and other people that were firemen. You know, my best friend's dad was a fireman, you know, nurses, teachers, regular salt of the earth people. And some were even more that were doing their thing in the military. So that was what I was around. People that were teachers, all of this shit, diverse jobs that the people, the parents of my classmates did. And hardworking black people. And, you know, she just, like, assumed that, oh, you know, I was like, why are you saying that? I didn't grow up poor. And it's nothing wrong to admit that you didn't grow up poor. And if you grew up poor, you grew up poor and you made something out of yourself, and good for you. You know what I'm saying? But I remember her bringing shit up like that. And it's just like, okay. So she obviously had some issues and. But it's unfortunate, but something like that, you know, as a me posting about, oh, way to go, Aziz, you know, for like speaking your truth, which is really the truth, speaking your truth on a TV show and being an actor of color, entertainer of color, do your thing. And a couple people got bent out of shape about that. So when you have something like a killing, you know, like that's been going on for years, and where I'm from, the police in Prince George's County were hardcore. They didn't fuck around. I think Chadwick Boseman's play, Deep Azure, was about police brutality. That was like his world premiere play. And I think I'm sure that I mentioned this on the podcast before. That it was about like a guy that got killed in PG County. Chadwick Boseman, University of Michigan. I was trying to see if I could drama hip hop theater. Da 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 da. Anyway, yeah. It's got some shit in there. So it's a lot. Yep. Okay, so here we go. This is what I wanted. So it's a play that they did in verse, like an iambic pentameter, and it was like it was very hip hop influenced. Illuminates the topical issues of racial profiling and police brutality. Yeah, so it was, that play was about that, and I think it was set in the DC area, or like it was at a fictional HBCU. I don't 100% remember. But the point is, you know, so you're going to have division. when you have, if you're going to have division over something like an Indian guy talking to a white guy on a late night show, you're definitely going to have some when it comes to police brutality and the killing, and more specifically, the killing of black people by the people that were hired and put through rigorous training to protect them. So, you know, people will say, okay, so let's take it from here. So on Facebook and social media, you get to see the people that are racist and you'd be like, oh shit. It's kind of like if you just really saying all lives matter is you're basically just being tone deaf to the needs and to the feelings of minorities, of black people. And it means that you don't want to hear it and you're being dismissive. And the whole we're all alike thing, we're not all alike. We're not all alike. We're not the same. Are we the same as far as anatomy and physiology goes? Yeah. But I said this last week, and I probably said it before. I said it last week, people treat black people and having this skin that we have as an impediment, as a disease, and it's not going to stop until the people in power, the people on the other side, get their shit together. How do they get it together? I don't know. I don't have the answers for that, but I'm damn sure going to speak on it. I would be remiss if I didn't say anything. I've said it when the Freddie Gray and the Trayvon and countless people, I talk about it in my stand-up. You know, because it could happen to me. It's not like I've been pulled over before. I was trying to count on the times that I've gotten pulled over, whether I was wrong or right, I was trying to count those out. I was talking to my dad and trying to figure it out. And even more since I've been here, because you drive more when you're in the tri-state area and all that stuff. So it's something that could easily happen to me. It's not like not like some Zika virus or what's the thing, SARS, or what's the disease that the guy got on? One of those fucking, like, that. I mean, that's kind of like a one in a million type thing. But this shit, this police brutality shit could happen to me. It could easily happen to me or any of my friends, any of the people that are in my circle. So it's you know, it's important to talk about it, and it hurts. It makes me feel sad, and it makes you feel helpless. And it's just like this, like you're, and so for people to not really try to empathize or understand, it makes you angry. It makes you feel hopeless. As these people, like, I'm not going to argue with anybody online for that shit. I don't argue with people about movies. You know, maybe I'll argue with JL, and not even that much. You know, I'm not going to argue with anybody online. I think I said something about the kid getting blown up, and I would have liked to have known what type of value meal he would have gotten if they let him live, you know, and then some people said some shit, but I didn't respond to them. Like, I didn't really give a fuck what they said. I just wanted to say what I wanted to say. And then people say, oh, well, if he turned himself in, and it sucks. And it just goes back to, like, black skin being like it's a bad thing, and or it's an impediment or an affliction. And it made me think about this time. So West Nyack, New York, Levity Live, my home club. It's in a mall. It's inside the Palisades Mall. And before shows, as you guys know, I like to go to the movies. I like to hang out, go to the theater, relax, enjoy myself, and then go do the show. And so I'm doing that. I pick out a time. I go to see this movie, A Bigger Splash. This is the weekend that I opened for Dan Cummins. I was emceeing for him. So I go to the movies. Like, oh, okay, Bigger Splash. I'm going to see the Tilda Swinton movie. I like her. She's, you know, she's cool. I'll check it out. Her good things. The trailer looked good. And so I pick a seat, and this is the assigned seating. This is where you can pick your seat, the nice reclining chair. I'm like, bet. And they were like, okay, it's in the smallest theater. You got the theater to yourself, private screening. Get my seat, get a little popcorn, sit down in my assigned seat, and I'm getting ready to watch the movie. About 15 or 20 minutes later, these two white women come in. I think it's like a mother, daughter. And one of them looks at me and looks at the ticket like she thinks like I'm not in my right seat. She doesn't say anything to me. And then when her daughter or whoever says, oh, aren't you supposed to be in this one? She said, well, not anymore. Like I was going to do something to her if she sat beside me. I'm like, what the fuck am I going to do to you in a Tilda Swinton movie? Like, I'm that dude that's going to fuck you up or bother you. I'm in a Tilda Swinton movie where she's playing an aging rock star. Yeah, I'm gonna hurt you. It's not like this shit was like Tarzan or fucking Central Intelligence. This is like a off the map fucking movie that I'm surprised is even playing at this mainstream theater in this mall. Like, I'm gonna hurt you. And it's just like, it's fucking annoying. The things that you have to, and this is something you have to live with every day. That's only a small thing. That's not like, oh my God, she's not like, you know, they like when people clutch their purse or when they get scared of you or when you're walking behind somebody at night and you're just trying to get to your car and they're actually in your way. And it's just like you feel awkward. I got to feel awkward as a big black dude. Oh, these motherfuckers think I'm going to rob them. You hear comedians talk about that shit all the time. It's real, man. It's just not no bullshit that happened last week. Everybody's like, oh, it's a rough week. It's rough every fucking week. We just don't talk about it. It's fucking hard to be black. Nobody wants to hear that. And it's different because black people's history is different than other minorities. And I'm not trying to get on no struggle Olympic shit that I just talked about, but it's different because our relationship with the United States is different than other minority classes, than other groups, you know? So it's really sad. And I understand why people are upset, and they have the right to be, and they have the right to protest and do what they need to do. I would just say, be safe, black people, be more aware. Be alert. You don't have to prove a point by going to a protest with an AR-15 because you have open carry and you have a license to do that. Just because you have a license to do that doesn't mean that people are going to take you how they should take you. And then you get your picture on a Twitter feed that makes you look like the criminal that you're not. And they still keep it up and it ruins your fucking life. Now, I'm not saying that guy should have, he shouldn't have. I'm not trying to be on no respectability politics shit. But just know that it's two different Americas. I was talking to my parents about that, and a lot of people don't realize that shit. One for white people and others for us, for black people and other minorities. And people got to be more aware of that shit. And I'm not saying the guy shouldn't. Fuck it, I wouldn't have did it. But that's him and that's me. And that's why why black people aren't a monolith. Everybody's different. That's just my thoughts. And I hope it stops, man. It's really sad. And the only thing we could do is to keep talking about it, is to keep talking about race. And it just seems like it's something that people are so afraid to talk about. And thank goodness for people like D-Ray and Netta and the people that are, you know, in front of the Black Lives Matter movement. And I know some people get jealous of them, you know, because they get the Twitter followers and they get articles written about them. But I guess all that shit happened back in the day, too, with SNCC and all these other the SCLC. People got mad at people for getting shine that they wasn't getting, that they thought they were supposed to get. And just like forgetting about the common goal of, you know, equal rights and all that shit. So shout out to all those people that are protesting, people that are involved. Just continue to stay woke, continue to take care of yourselves and each other. And I reckon that's all you could do, and to keep evolving. And it, but I think the thing about this, which what is good about social media, is making more people aware that this is a thing. The, you know, this is something that continues to go on. People, one thing I feel awkward, but not really awkward about, but it's just like, is, you know, when you see people, when something like this happens, like the white people will post Martin Luther King. They'll post Martin Luther King Jr. Quotes and shit in his picture. Like, it's like, hey, remember black people, don't get excited. Don't cause any riots. Please don't. You know, they get nervous and scared about that shit. They don't know no better. I don't know. And then some of your white friends are, you know, it seems like, you know, white friends that you try, I think maybe I've tried to have conversations about, or maybe like we've touched on racial things like in the past, and now they're like, Jesus, I guess I stand with Black Lives Matter. This is ridiculous. This shouldn't be happening. So now people are finally starting to wake up. So I guess that's a good thing, because nothing, you know, we just have cameras now. We just have so many different. Who said religion is the opiate of the masses? Was that Karl Marx? I'm not gonna try to be smart. I'm gonna make sure I got it. I think it was Karl Marx. Yes, I was right. The full quote from Karl Marx translated: religion is the sigh of the oppressed creature, and the heart of a heartless world, and the soul of a soulless conditions. I don't know why. See, okay, so I don't know if you guys heard that, but they're cutting grass. Like, they cut grass. It seems like they cut grass every day. And I don't know. Like, the Mexican people will cut grass. They will cut grass in the snow if you let them. I don't know why Trump wants to build a wall, because they're the only ones that want to work. And that's too close to a Patrice O'Neill bit that he did on his half hour. But it's fucking true. Like, so I hope this doesn't distort your listening. But so, all right, let me read that again. Religion is the sigh of the oppressed creature, the heart of a heartless world, and the soul of soulless conditions. It is the opium of the people. And so that's basically, he's saying religion is the opiate of the masses. What we have now, we have in the 21st century, have so many different opiates. We got Netflix, we got Apple TV, we got Amazon, we got our cell phones, we got Chipotle. We could order all this shit through our phone, and it's fucking amazing. But there's still that racism, it's still that schism. That shit still exists. And you just have to, you know, you have to be cognizant of that, and just to really, you know, take care of people so we can actually live up to those Justin Timberlake tweets. Guys, why don't we try to live up to those Justin Timberlake tweets that we're all the same, and all your angry racist friends that try to throw empty rhetoric in your face by saying we're all the same. I saw some that was like, we're all the same. It's like, it's basically saying we're all the same, niggers. What's your fucking problem, you black motherfuckers? You know, that's what I feel like they're saying when they say that bullshit. All right, so on a lighter note, really just on switching gears without a segue, the music, I listened to the new Maxwell. I think it sounds good. Like, if you're a Maxwell fan, it's pretty much the same shit. That, like, the guy's good. He's a great singer. So, I mean, he's fine. Also, when I'm listening to Big Crit, came out with a 12 songs, basically a mixtape that he called 12 for 12, and kind of, I don't, parallel thinking, I don't think he stole early Mundane Festival episode like titles, but he called it 12 for 12. So he released 12 songs, and the cover art was a picture of an athlete that wore number 12 each song. And Crit, I enjoy Crit. I'm a fan. I've been a fan since, you know, maybe like 5 or 6 years ago, if not longer than that. So that's good. Maxwell's good. I haven't listened to the Schoolboy Q yet, but I will eventually. I just been I was talking. Actually, got to see the homie D Lemon at the stand on last weekend on Saturday, and we were just talking about, you know, like love and music, but I listen to podcasts more so than I listen to music. So it's kind of, and I've said this to you guys before, it's harder for the music to kind of seep in, but I've been listening to stuff. So I'll try to get into the Schoolboy Q, and I just haven't been playing my sports video games enough. And speaking, well, let's close on video games. I'll give you a couple movies. I'll talk about some movies. I saw two movies yesterday, did not go to the theater. I saw one on Netflix and one on demand, and we'll go with The Invitation. I saw The Invitation, which is on Netflix, and I'll read you the little blurb. Here we go. While attending a dinner party at his former house, a man starts to believe that his ex-wife and her new husband have sinister plans for the guests. And that's basically it. That's all you need to know. It's like an hour and 40 minutes. And for it to be less than 2 hours, it starts off pretty slow. And they kind of take their time to establish everything because it's a bunch of different characters, maybe 8 to 10 people at this dinner party. And, you know, like there's like flashbacks that happen. There's and then it just crescendos to the end. And it's good. And when the shit hits the fan, it hits the fan and it doesn't stop. So it's definitely it's a thriller. And I would recommend this if you're just, you know, you just want to watch something that's kind of fun. That is fun. I would say go see the invitation. It's on Netflix. And the cast is not a real super famous cast. Logan Marshall Green, Tammy Blanchard, Michael Huiz, one dude that was on Lost, Emma Yatse Corinaldi, who was in one of those Ava DuVernay movies. So this movie's not gonna like distract you from seeing like some star in it. You know, it's just like some good ass actors doing their thing. And I think you would fuck with it if you watched it. What's the other movie? Okay, the other movie I saw, The Phenom. I watched it on demand. So you can get it on, you can rent it on iTunes, YouTube, Amazon Video, wherever you can download and stream movies. This movie called The Phenom, which is about a sports therapist, Paul Giamatti, tries to help a troubled rookie pitcher. A sports therapist, Paul Giamatti, tries to help a troubled rookie pitcher. Damn it! A sports therapist, Paul Giamatti, tries to help a troubled rookie pitcher, played by Johnny Simmons, who grew up with an abusive father, Ethan Hawke. That's it. That's what that movie is. Really good movie. I really enjoyed this. Johnny Simmons, I remember seeing him in the girl that just came out as bi, Aubrey Plaza, The To-Do List. He was like the guy that she should have been dating throughout the whole movie, and then she ends up dating him at the end. That was where I first remember seeing him. So he plays this pitcher, this young major league pitcher who's in a slump. And Paul Giamatti is the shrink that he talks to, the sports psychologist, I think, and sports therapist, like the description said. Chris, come on, buddy. And it's good. And I think early front runner for best supporting actor, Ethan Hawke. Ethan Hawke was on the screen when he first came on the screen. Within like 2 minutes, I was like, this motherfucker is going in. Like, he's doing his thing. He's I would say chewing scenery is has a bit of a negative connotation to it. But I would just say he got busy, he did his thing, and I would say he definitely should be in the conversation for best supporting actor when it comes to award season. And everybody was good. Johnny Simmons was good. All the supporting characters, but I really enjoyed this movie. You're really not on the baseball field that much. It's more of a, like, just characters in rooms talking to each other. And that's some of my favorite type of acting to watch anyway. That just from a personal standpoint, personal preference. So both highly recommend both these. Something fun, The Invitation, and like a little cerebral, nice, solid flick. The Phenom is definitely worth checking out. So video game. I have a video game recommendation. I played this game called Inside, and it's for the PC. It's for the Xbox One and the PC. And I just stumbled upon a Polygon review last week, and they were talking about this game. Like, oh my God, this is the best game ever. But, you know, they were jizzing all over the place about this game. And I was like, okay, let me check it out. Let me look up some clips of it. Let me see what's good with it. And it's a terrific game. They say it's about a 3-hour game, but I died a lot and I beat it. I would say it's probably something I could finish in one sitting, but I ended up I ended up finishing it in 3 sittings. And then there's also like some achievements that you can unlock, so I'll probably play it again eventually. But it's a fun game. It starts off, you play this little boy. The game starts off in the woods. It's dark. It's like this bleak, dystopian, futuristic, sad, macabre, gloomy, rainy, dark world. And it just starts. You're this kid in a red shirt with no face. There's no dialogue in it. All you can really hear is breathing. And it's like, and you just hear the elements. That's pretty much it. And you start off, it's dark, you're running through the woods, and then all of a sudden there's people with flashlights, and then there's dogs that can chase you, and it's and then you end up just being inside this facility. That's all I'm going to say. I'm going to be very vague about it, but this is a terrific game. It could be, and I have not played Uncharted 4 yet, but I would say, you know, if you video game nerds, it'll probably be on the year's best games list. By the end of this year, it'll be on your list of best games of 2016. If you like my recommendations, if you like them in the past, I would highly recommend this game. Look at the trailer, read the reviews. It's a really, really fun game. And I think you would enjoy it. The ending was I kind of want to talk to somebody about it if they played it. I tried to tell Andrew to check it out. I don't know if he will. I don't even know if they make it for Mac. He has a Mac. But I hope somebody plays it, and we can talk about the shit, because it's an interesting game. And it's good because once you beat it, the nerds are so helpful. Like the people that like from IGN, all these other people, they have podcasts just to talk about these games. And so you don't feel so alone when you finish. So I really enjoyed it. It's fun. It's a terrific game, and it's definitely worth playing. And I think it's like $20. I downloaded the Steam app, and I downloaded it from there, and I played it on my laptop. And someone gave me I'm trying to think who it was. Someone gave me the specs, the info to hook up my PlayStation 4 joystick to my computer and watch it that way and play it with the joystick. So that was pretty dope. So Inside is a terrific game. Buy it, play it, and if you like it, either way, tell me how you feel about it if you play it. And how much did we do? We did 54 minutes. Sorry for this squeaky chair. But that's it, guys. That's the end of the end of the show for this week. This has been episode 175 of the show. Thanks so much for listening. I have a guest in the crosshairs that I'm scheduled to talk to this week. So hopefully that'll happen. If it does, it's going to be great. And I will share that with you when it happens. So thanks again, everybody. I'll talk to you next time. Peace.